Welcome to the Net Zero Investor Podcast, where we discuss how investors tackle climate change, the biggest issue of the 21st century. This podcast is brought to you by Bluefield. Today we want to talk about recycling, not just the concept of washing up your yogurt cups and disposing them in a separate bin, but how we apply the concept of recycling to renewable infrastructure assets. Our podcast coincides with Global Recycling Day, so that's an annual event on the 18th of March, and it's basically aimed at encouraging the reduction of waste. Now, you might think, what does that have to do with renewable infrastructure? So the average lifespan of a solar panel is around 25 to 30 years, and as you might know, to meet our net zero targets, we're going to need a lot more solar panels and wind turbines. But the inherent paradox of the energy transition is that it's extremely resource intensive. We're rapidly running out of some of the critical minerals like lithium, cobalt, and nickel to build these renewable infrastructure assets. So that's where the concept of circular economy comes in, which in the context of clean energy infrastructure means recycling existing assets as much as possible. With me today, I've got Georgia Whitehouse. Georgia is a senior ESG analyst at Bluefield, and Anna Costa. Anna is professor of sustainable architecture at Lancaster University. So to give you a bit more context, Bluefield and Lancaster University have teamed up last year to launch a research program on recycling renewable energy assets. Georgia, perhaps you can tell me a little bit more about why Bluefield is interested in the circular economy and what your role in this research is.
Perhaps I'll start with a background to Bluefield for those who are not familiar. So Bluefield are a group of companies that are specialised in developing, building, operating and maintaining renewable energy infrastructure. We have a presence within Europe, but the main focus of my work is our UK-listed fund, the Bluefield Solar Income Fund, which was listed on the UK Stock Exchange in 2013. So the Bluefield Solar Income Fund consists of a portfolio of around 900 megawatts of operational wind and solar assets, and we have a pipeline of 1.5 gigawatts in battery storage and solar. My role within ESG is to identify opportunities to embed sustainability considerations to both minimise the adverse impacts that our assets may have and also to maximise the positive contributions that our assets can make to people and planet. And in doing so, we can build long-term resilience. The focus of my work over the last year or so, I'd say, has been quite heavily on the circular economy. And that, I suppose, is the reason why I'm here to talk to you today.
Yeah, maybe tell me a little bit about what is the concept of circular economy? What does that actually mean?
The easiest way to explain what a circular economy is by explaining what it isn't. And we can do so with the concept of a linear economy. So in a linear economy, there is a take, make, dispose pattern whereby you extract minerals out of the ground, you use them for a certain amount of time, and then they end up in landfill a lot of the time. So in a circular economy, what we're trying to do is prevent waste going to landfill and ensure that materials are kept within a system for as long as possible.
Very clear. Thank you. That makes a lot of sense. And Anna, I guess that's where you come in as well, right? Tell me a bit more about Lancaster University's role and your background in the team.
So I'm the principal investigator on this project with Bluefield, but I've been working also with a wider team across Energy Lancaster, which is a research centre within the institution. And the idea of the Energy Lancaster is also to have a multidisciplinary approach. So we have experts from management, chemistry, engineering, social sciences as well. And it's really important to have this broader perspective to the table as well, because when we talk about the PV panels and we talk about what's going to happen at the end of life, you need to have an holistic perspective from the extraction of materials to the end of life. We need to consider biodiversity, how that's going to affect the soils, how is that going to affect the population around those places as well. So it's really important that we are not working alone and we have all these multiple perspectives together. So it's great to have a diverse team and also being supported by my colleagues as well.
Speaking of which, your background is an architect. So how did you come to focus on renewable infrastructure?
So in architecture, you also talk about materials and what type of materials you specify for your projects as well. So I'm also really focused on that sustainable aspect of architecture and having in mind that how we can be more resourceful of the materials that we use is really important. So my work started with material passports and kind of recognizing that value of materials and extending the life cycle of those materials within the supply chain. And then this circular economy approach, which is clearly linked with PV panels as well. So when we talk about architecture, you can also talk about the broader built environment. So we can see there's no humans inhabiting that solar farm, but actually you have some relationship with the humans, and it's also linked with the kind of a more urban design perspective as well. So it's a different scale, but it's linked with architecture.
Thank you. That makes a lot of sense. Now, Georgia, Bluefield obviously is no stranger to making renewable infrastructure assets. So you've been doing that for some time. Can you tell me a bit more about the current challenges around recycling solar panels?
There may be some instances where the equipment may not reach the end of its manufacturer stated lifetimes. And this could be due to different reasons, such as weather-related damage. It might be if it has not been maintained to an appropriate maintenance schedule. And there are also financial factors involved. So we've seen a recent uptick in revamping and repowering activities as a means to optimize yield and extend the financial lifetime of the asset. Whilst this is really good for ensuring that generation is maintained and optimized, it also brings forward the need to identify responsible recycling and reuse pathways. As an industry, we've also seen rapid technology advancement over the past, I'd say, decade or so. This has been great in terms of maximizing PV efficiency, but it also means that there's such a diverse range of technologies that are installed and also available to buy. And this then can create challenges when it comes to recycling. What we also see is that there might be limited data available upstream regarding the materials that are contained within the panels. And this could also present difficulties, as you were speaking about before, in terms of critical minerals and how we recover them. So we really see end of life as a key stage in a responsible renewable asset life cycle, and it's emerging as a key sustainability topic for the industry to address. In the UK, the first generation of solar and wind assets are nearing the end of their expected lifetimes. And we need to make sure that as an industry, we are well supported by mature recycling markets. And this is essential as the energy transition accelerates.
So how much of a solar panel can then actually be recovered once it's gone through that 25 or 30 year life cycle?
I think it depends on the technologies that you are using, and you can have mainly dividing into categories of mechanical and chemical technologies and processes of recovering those materials. One of the things that ideally, and it's always about the energy that you need to spend to recover those materials, and probably the most energy efficient is trying to reuse those materials, because sometimes those PV panels. So for instance, sometimes you are decommissioning a solar farm that because the PV panels are not suitable to be in use on that solar farm, but maybe you could use them for domestic use. And that could be really beneficial if we could have like a system in place that actually we can reuse those. Sometimes we have other challenges like recertification, checking if the PV panels are fit for purpose. Also in terms of coordinating things that when they are decommissioning and then being installed in another place as well. So we also believe that material passports can facilitate these, because then you can have a digital database that can help to communicate among different stakeholders across the process as well. But then if we look at the recycling aspect of it, for instance, you have solutions with the mechanical recycling that is almost like you shred layer by layer the panel. So you take the aluminium apart, then you can take the glass apart, then you extract the glass to be reused as a recycled component to another new product, which is great. And then through different processes, then you can extract the metals. And one of the major challenges also then the last one that you have is the polysilicon together with the silver. And that can be done through different processes, but also really intensive energy processes as well. So currently we have some people already in the UK able to do these. It's just a question of if that's the best option, if there are more sustainable options as well. And also, ideally, what we would like to see is also seeing the design of the panels being designed in a way that actually they take into consideration what's going to happen at the end of life. And if you can also design having in mind the disassembly process as well. So that will be an ideal world. But of course, most of the design of the panels are based on efficiency. And that's why then it's not compatible of how are we extracting those materials at the end of life as well. Another thing to consider within that is, so for instance, nowadays research shows that we can recover more than 90% of a PV panel, which seems really positive that you can salvage 90% of the materials. The problem is also when we look at the 10% of materials that are not being recovered. And what happens is that those 10% is probably 50% of the value of the whole PV panel. So even if it's 10%, when you look at the value of materials and the critical raw materials, that's where you have the copper, the polysilicon, the silver. So then actually focusing on those is also really important, because that's also part of the materials that we should be preserving as well and trying to recover. And then it's also because we have different technologies, we have loads of people focusing on these, but it's also understanding what's economical viable, and also how an industry can also have informed decisions to select the best processes to go through, or if you can have any option. So then you can have an informed option on where to send your PV panels and what's happening to that as well. So one of the things that we are also considering is also creating material passports for those recycled products, that you know exactly where those materials are coming from. You can trace back, you can understand the carbon that you saved by using recycled components as well.
One thing that really strikes me about the whole question is, over the Christmas period, I've been reading quite a bit about mining and minerals. And for example, Ed Conway's book, Material World, talks a bit about the sheer amount of soil that has to be dug out to get these minerals. And it's kind of mildly terrifying if you think about what kind of damage we have to do to the earth and the kind of amount of soil that has to be dug out to make the energy transition happen in a way, which obviously we can't not do, but that's worrying.
It's also about value. And we discuss a lot what value means. If it's the value, it's the economic value, if it's the environmental value, or if it's the social value. So when you get to the point that you decide to decommission a panel, maybe that panel can still produce some energy. So maybe it's better just to keep it in use, even if it's 50% of the efficiency, rather than decommissioning it. Because the materials that you can salvage at that time, it will be the same materials that you will salvage maybe 10 years after. But then during those 10 years, it will be producing some energy. But then if you look at it from a more financial perspective, then you decide, no, I can have a new panel that's not that expensive and then produce more energy. So I will make more money as well. So it's always about values and what drives the economy as well and the industry. But also, I think having a clear idea of the whole process across the supply chain and having this holistic perspective of what's happening and how different stakeholders can have a decision within this process, it's really important. Actually, it's what we are trying to do throughout these research projects. So we are willing to interview different stakeholders across the supply chain and then get a broader perspective about what can be done. So then the main outputs of this project are to produce a white paper on the end of renewable assets, and also a roadmap for the industry to take the lead and not wait for the disaster to happen, but also take some actions that actually avoid or at least create better solutions for the decommissioning process and the management of all the PV panel waste that's going to be generated.
Thank you, Anna. That's interesting. And I guess the first point you made on the values, I guess where Bluefield then comes in, because the obvious question is like, what's the business interest for Bluefield in supporting this sort of research?
Our purpose really is to deliver renewable energy responsibly. So as well as mitigating climate change being our driving mission and decarbonizing the energy sector and supporting net zero goals, we're also conscious of the wider impact that we can have on the environment and society from both a positive and a negative perspective. But we're committing to finding solutions that create this positive impact, not just from a sustainability perspective, but also considering solutions that align with financial objectives. So this might be through driving operational efficiencies or through creating new forms of value. I really see that the circular economy could be the organizing force that brings all of these considerations together. So by ensuring a circular economy, you know, we're not taking as many minerals out the ground. That helps to reduce nature-related risk, potentially social related risk. It's an all-encompassing solution, and there's lots of synergies with existing agendas that we're trying to drive. So it's true that this really hasn't impacted Bluefield or our industry at scale yet, but we know that in order to realize a truly circular economy, we need to plan ahead. We need to adopt that holistic perspective, as Anna was talking about. We need to look at the supply chain as a whole. And through that, we need to identify where we can design out waste in the first instance. And then secondly, where we can ensure that if waste is produced, that these materials can be fed back into a circular system.
Now, so far, our conversation has been pretty abstract, but what does it actually mean in practice? So what are you going to do with all these findings?
So within Bluefield, we've been working on applying the materials passport concept within our operations. So we've been exploring the feasibility of using this in our development projects through stakeholder engagement internally. But we also realized that this project has a much wider reach, and that if we want to drive change, as we've spoken about before, we need to adopt this holistic perspective, and we need to invite input from industry, academia, supply chain. We need everyone to be working towards the same goal. So that was really the fundamental principle behind the second project that we have with Lancaster University. And this really aims to take that broader perspective and invite all of those stakeholders into the discussion, so that we can create a roadmap for future innovation and research in this area. This is really how we hope to shift the dial towards a more circular solar industry.
Really interesting. So basically the idea with this, what I'm getting from this collaboration and what you alluded to as well before, is that you want to make the findings more widely available to the industry, right?
Yes, so we are planning to present it by the beginning of July. So we are aiming to have a white paper on the end of renewable assets and also a roadmap for the industry. And that will be public available, and we will be trying to disseminate that as much as possible. And we are also engaging with the government to see how that can be linked with some policy guidance and producing a policy paper summary as well.
Okay, well, we'll be keeping a close eye on that. That's really interesting. And hopefully, if other organizations take this on board, we'll soon find much more effective ways of using the scarce assets that we have, which is encouraging. Thanks very much for your time, both of you. That's been a really interesting conversation. Thanks very much. I hope you enjoyed listening to our podcast. If you want to find out more about this, please check out our coverage on the coming green commodities crisis on the Net Zero Investor website. If you want to discuss this in person, we've got a Net Zero Investor Transition Equity Summit coming up on the 24th of April in London. And we also have a Nature Positive Investment Forum coming up on the 30th of April in London. So I hope I'll see some of you there. Hope you enjoyed the podcast.